welcome to this episode of the Pastoral Restoration Podcast. I'm sitting down this afternoon with a gentleman by the name of Michael Mullen. And Michael, we'll get into your story and your involvement and integration with the Institute, and quite honestly, the vastness and depth of that in itself goes way back into, you know, the early 2000s, as we just got done this discussing. But for our listeners, I'm very excited to have you today, and it's really our honor to sit down with you. Michael is an athletic trainer by heart, I guess you would say. He also, you know, is licensed as a PTA and got his PRC credential in 2011. But Michael, thank you again for joining us today. You know, we're just discussing how this is pretty much the only way we're communicating with people these days, but just to take the time out of your busy schedule and joining us, I appreciate you being here. So thank you.
Always honored to have been asked. Thanks. And always a pleasure to catch up with you, Archie. Thank you.
Yeah. And for our listeners, Michael, just so they know, you're located in Portland, Maine, and you have a business there through integrative rehab training. Michael, we'll get into a little bit of your history and kind of circle back to where you are today and how you're operating and integrating in your day-to-day life. But if we could start by just reflecting on, as we talked about, you know, I myself don't know a ton about your early history and your early career and really what led you to the field of athletic medicine and you know, rehabilitation and movement, if you will. And who's some of the people in your life? We'll mention your son, Mitch, who's now entering the same kind of field in life as you are. We'll circle back to him maybe a little bit later. But what led you early on in your career to even have the desire to go down this route and eventually lead to where you are today?
Thanks, RJ. Yeah, so, you know, a couple of things. Frankly, like most people, you know, you always have to thank your mother for things. So before I went to college, I went to Plymouth State. It was Plymouth State College at the time up in New Hampshire, northern New Hampshire, and it's now Plymouth State University. She cut an article out of a newspaper that said, talked about athletic training. And she said, hey, read this. This sounds kind of interesting. Sounds like something you might like. I was very active growing up playing sports, you know, big into soccer and lacrosse and a lot of other very active lifestyle, if you would. I was intrigued with the human body, always had been, and so it kind of sounded like a good field to get into. So went to Plymouth State, literally within the first week, I think I signed up to major in athletic training and went through the four-year program there and really developed an interest in the human body, learning about it, understanding it more. I really liked the rehabilitation side of it. I mean, certainly athletic training is, you know, care and prevention of athletic injuries as well as assessment and rehabilitation. But I really was intrigued with the rehabilitation side of things. After graduating, I ended up getting a job working at a PT facility, kind of like as a, at the time, a physical therapy aide, assisting the physical therapist there, helping to run the PT clients through the exercise aspect of their physical therapy treatment programs. And I ran a program called Safe Sports Network, which is a program in the city of Manchester, New Hampshire that covered 3 to 4 high schools. And it was a free walk-in injury clinic. So every weekday afternoon between 3 and 6, and any student from any of these schools, because there was no athletic trainers on staff, could come into this PT clinic and be assessed by me, evaluated free of charge. I give them what I think's going on, make a recommendation, give them some things to do on their own at home, follow up in a couple of days, refer to a physician, you know, just kind of whatever the triage was needed at the time. And I also was responsible for coordinating coaches' education programs and the coverage for physician coverage for football for the 3 of the high schools. So there's a real kind of multidimensional aspect for a career. You know what I mean?
And well, you got your feet wet very early on with you know, athletic rehab and sports performance and all the things that came with it. It's so interesting that, you know, again, oftentimes people – for whatever you credit your mom, and it's like, well, I saw this article, I saw this thing in front of me. I thought it sounded interesting.
Yeah.
So many people in this field and within rehabilitation in general, either, it seems like either one, go through an injury themselves or have someone else that is in the field. Did you have any injuries at this, like anything within your own athletic realm that you had to go through rehab for as yourself or work with athletic trainers or just organically kind of had an interest in it?
Well, yeah, I think as you mentioned, anybody involved in athletics is going to turn an ankle or twig a knee or injure a shoulder. It was funny you said that because there were things that, and I hope this doesn't come out wrong, but there were things that I discovered about treating my own injuries that I found kind of interesting because I didn't have any guidance. That's just, I didn't get sent to PT for anything. There weren't athletic trainers at the high school I went to. I played lacrosse in college for a couple of years, and you know, being part of the athletic training department, I learned some things through that realm. But you know, early on, I mean, one statement my mom says to me is actually kind of funny. I have five brothers and sisters, and you know, each night one of us had to take a turn rubbing her back, giving her a back rub. You know, six kids, least we could do is give her a 10-minute back rub.
Yeah.
And she would say to me all the time, she goes, she always made me do extra time because she's like, it's like you knew what to do. It's like you knew where the knots were, you know what I mean? And you'd like work things out. And so the other kids were just kind of like, you know, rub their hand across my back. Yeah. So
there's a reason
elements
why
of what I learned. Sorry, go ahead.
There's a reason why she kind of put that athletic training, description in front of you.
Yeah. So I remember having broken my leg. I broke my tibia and my fibula when I was a kid. I remember like doing self bilateral jumping and single leg hopping, working on balance. You know what I mean? Like all these things that just kind of seemed like I needed to do because I wasn't comfortable doing them. So. Yeah.
Well, and we'll get into some of the clientele and patients you work with, but it's really this concept of, you know, as you are learning and growing in your own professional life, you have to really feel and grow with your own experiences and match your own experiences to where you want to go with, you know, your career. So there's always some piece of the puzzle that people seem to have experience with, or whether that be an injury, or as you mentioned, you were doing, you know, bilateral activity or single leg activity without even knowing really why or why it felt like you should be doing it. So it's kind of a cool story.
Yeah.
You mentioned, Michael, that you ended up working in a PT setting and kind of organically once again ended up, you know, working as a PT aide and eventually got your PTA. But how did the time that you spent working within more of that clinical, you know, I'm not sure if it was outpatient, but you can highlight a little bit of what that setting was, but how did that vary from, you know, at this point you're an athletic trainer that then transitioned over into this more clinical setting. Today you're kind of back towards, well, you kind of molded the two together and, you know, are pretty much a clinical athletic trainer, but how did that kind of change your perspective or, you know, further you into integrative rehab and kind of molding the two together, if you will?
I think in some ways, being that early years of being an aide where I would take people through their exercise activities and I would take them through the machines or I'd take them through weight bearing exercises and watching and observing and learning the art of cueing and, you know, seeing something that just kind of seemed like, you know, do me a favor, move this way. You know what I mean? Or adjust your hips that way, or just whatever little tweaks you do and like, oh yeah, that feels so much different. And then you're kind of starting to kind of figure that out. And
yeah.
Learning to apply that to what I'd learned from a rehab perspective. But then as I was continuing to grow by taking courses, because since really early in my career, I just would take whatever I could get my hands on for continuing education. And regardless of wherever I was in any environment I've been in over the years, I've always been fortunate to be in a situation with a very generous CEU package. So I just use it every year, you know, every course I could attend. And so I'm one who listens and absorbs, and sometimes it takes a while to absorb, but then I apply and I play with it with a couple people. I play with it on my own. You know what I mean? I review the information and the literature. I talk to colleagues. And I think that whole process with working with a very interactive group of physical therapists in that facility, which I feel looking back now, feel very proud to say of, because it's not always that way. And I've been in environments that weren't that way. I think helped a lot. I think it forms that cohesive understanding, and everybody's learning from each other and everybody's observing from each other versus being protective of what they do. So I think that helped with my growth early on and being able to understand things better.
Yeah. And I know I've heard you speak in the past about, you know, there's differences between what, you know, how you cue and how you interact with an athlete as an athletic trainer for literal sports rehab through a team setting or, you know, whatever sport you may be working with. And again, early on in your career, it was with all these athletics. And there's a difference between doing that in that setting and then also just switching over to having one-on-one time with one, you know, one single individual, even if it's a half hour or whatever it may be. You go from, you know, having to treat an athlete or having to tape an ankle or get it, you know, whatever it may be to get them back out on the field, to then being able to go and really analyze movement on a slower, you know, a slower pace, and being able to not only look at them and as you mentioned, kind of running through exercises with them and wait a second, let's try this or let's try that. There's really a difference in an athlete and what you can do and how you cue and how you get points across versus a clinical patient in a, yeah. The two rehab realms are really, you know, point blank, they are different. And yep. from where you were then to where you are today, you do such a great job molding and melding the two together that, you know, I think that's some of what your appreciation for that that outpatient setting really helped, probably, you know, looking back on it, being able to kind of mesh the two.
I appreciate that. Thank you. There's elements of the general biomechanics of what we can, you know from your schooling. We'll just say that numbers, measures, things like that. That's you know, helpful, but yeah. There's elements of what, you know, just looks right and what seems good and what looks fluid and what you see from side to side and front to back. And just sometimes there's just some things that just seem so obvious. On either realm of the performance realm or the injured realm.
Yeah.
And it's something that, you know, they had no idea about.
It's obvious to you and I or to the observer, yeah. But then to the actual client or patient, as you mentioned, they have no even sense of what, you know, what leg they're standing on or the limitations within whatever X, Y, and Z.
Yeah. The adaptation they've created, the compensation. Yep. A guy the other day is a great example. He's ran for years. He does long, long runs. And I've only seen him once or twice. I'm like, let me just go outside. Let's watch you run. And you know, he ran right into his midline. He was basically running on a line. Like every foot strike came right directly underneath him. I'm like, it just looked, I was like, wait a minute, this doesn't look right.
And you start,
it's not wrong. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's not wrong. But
to him, it's how he's done it forever.
Correct. But his issues were like, oh, well, this makes sense. And so I'm like, do me a favor, make believe you're running. Here's the white line. Make believe you're running on both sides. Let's go, oh my gosh, I feel both sides of my hip now. It's like all these subtle little things. And sometimes they're just.
And by the way,
they do go to both sides. They go to the rehab, they go to the training realm.
Let's also slow you down and let's see how you walk compared to how you run. And you know, is he swinging his arms? Is he,
all that stuff. So. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, those are kind of your early, again, I myself didn't know a whole lot about how you got involved in the field and the profession, and it all ties into where you end up. And we talked about your son and how he's now kind of going down the same rabbit hole and athletic training and things like that. But it's always kind of fun and interesting to get people's backstory because it directly, you know, our path is what creates our pattern, and our pattern kind of ends up where we are today. So
100%. Yep.
The settings you were on early on, you know, I think really played an important role into where you are today. Michael, we talked a little bit about, you know, before we started, kind of your first exposure to PRI. And again, you know, I'll let you tell the listeners, but it's so cool how that happened. In general, you know, you mentioned that you have always ingrained yourself with formally what we call continuing education and coursework and really just learning. And to some degree that has to be done on the personal level. You know, we can teach everyone, you know, the old saying, you can lead a horse to the water, but you can't teach them how to drink type of thing. So for you, you know, walk us through a little bit about how you first came across PureEye, again, it's so cool. Your story is so cool because really it was a self-motivating, again, you'll get into it and can tell our listeners, but for someone to really find it on an organic level and through research and reading and your own kind of your own search, if you will, for any newness and any novel approach, or at the time, maybe it was breathing or a hamstring, but walk us through kind of how that happened for you. What led you to kind of get into our coursework and your early interests within our science?
Absolutely. I'll backpedal just for a moment and just say there was a time from 95 to 2000 that I was in San Francisco. I had the opportunity to run the rehab department for a pretty prominent orthopedic surgeon's practice. Many, many patents, developed his own surgical techniques, own surgical instrumentation. He was doing meniscal transplants and all these funky procedures that not many people were doing. So there were no protocols in place. He was running, you know, camps, and I was working with a lot of professional athletes. And so there was a lot of learning that needed to happen in that environment. And during that learning process is when I started getting exposed to other models and other interventions that through coursework. I was trying to figure out what people would ask me, like, how do I breathe during this? Or, you know, do I pull my belly in? Or what do I do? We talked earlier about Paul Hodge's work, and I was learning about that in the 90s. And I just didn't have enough answers. And so when I moved to Portland, to Maine in 2000, it was right around 2000. I mentioned before, it's kind of like this trifecta of sorts. You know, I heard about this protonics brace, had no idea what it was about. And it was for telefemoral pain. I had this complicated patient I was working on with one of the therapists, you know, ordered this thing, went through the insurance company. You know what I mean? That rep came out, fit her. I know it's her right knee. This, we're putting it on the left side. I'm like, I don't know if that seems right. You know what I mean? The story. So played with that a little bit myself as well as with her, but not really thoroughly understanding any element of it nearly to the capacity that I should have. Read an article right around that time that Ron had written in Biomechanics Magazine. Can't remember the exact name, but basically talking about hamstrings as a triplanar muscle group. And reading through that, I don't even know how many times, 3, 4, 5 times, trying to get my head around the concepts and the biomechanics of it and being intrigued by it. And at the same time, preparing for a talk I had to do on hip and hip biomechanics and rehabilitation for post-surgical hip labor repairs, things like that, because I was developing a lot of protocols at the time, came across the website. Like people with balls between the legs, feet on the wall, like, you know, breathing stuff. I mean, I got to go check this out. And so that's when I took my first course in 2002 after, you know, reading a little bit about things online, which was out at Leahy Clinic in Boston, which was Ron's, you know, my first exposure to the Institute and Ron's work. So,
well, you know, that's kind of, you know, my comment about, it was kind of preceding your introduction there with our science, but it's so cool, Michael, because not too often, you know, as I mentioned to you earlier, not too often do people organically, again, you were searching for answers for X, Y, or Z question, led you down the rabbit hole of protonics and later on hamstring length and all the things associated with those early days of our Institute. But, you know, a handful of times we do have people come across us, and today, you know, quite frankly, in 2000, our website probably was like these blocks of information. There's a few links on there to get an article. You had to probably still go to the actual journal itself. Yeah. This is the early days of even the internet. So it's like to come across something and, you know, find it on your own and then get information about it and eventually take a course. It's just so different today. And the resources we have at our fingertips that back then, again, you know, physical, you probably came across a physical copy in the journal, in the biomechanics journal. And, you know, we could go get it in 2 seconds today. We're back then. Yeah. You had to really search for this stuff. So
yeah,
it's a cool story. And as you mentioned, you ended up at a course in Boston in 2002. Back then, I think we probably had only a handful of courses. It was probably back when it was called postural restoration before it was switched to postural respiration.
Yep.
The Myokin course, you know, started off as a hybrid between the two. And another, it kind of leads us down your story as well. You were really growing with the Institute because of the timing that you found it. So there was only a couple courses and you took them fairly quickly. Is there anything memorable? And again, it sounds like Ron taught that course in Boston or you were exposed to him, but do you know what it was about that first course that said, okay, there's something to this? You know, at the time you were reading a little bit about Paul Hodges and breath work and breathing mechanics. Obviously it probably got into some patellofemoral issues, acetabular femoral, you know, biomechanics that are taught in the myokinematics course. Mm-hmm. Was there anything that just stood out to you that said, okay, I think there's something to this. I need to continue this journey. Obviously you continue to take courses and we'll get into kind of your credentialing later on, but any memorable thoughts about that first course or your first exposure to this?
A few things actually. At number one, what I felt like were answers. Cause I'm pretty observant with my work and there's a lot of things that I would see, observe, feel, move, palpate. I'm always moving things, a foot, an ankle, a knee, a hip, a back, a rib, a whatever. And I just found some fairly consistent things and no answers. I found and observed some stuff that people would do that were patterned, whatever, you know, observationally biased, that nobody had any answers. The only thing you would ever get is just, oh, they're right-handed or whatever, yeah. You know, simpleton. That to me was in the direction. I'm like, okay, let's just figure out what these answers are because this seems to make sense to me because someone's finally looking at the body differently than everybody else that I go see in all these courses that I take.
Yeah.
Number two was his willingness actually at that course to listen to people's questions and say, you know what? I'm going to make it, I need to refine that. That's not clear enough. That, I mean, his clear drive to make the message as clear as possible to help the learner learn told me that's okay. It's in its early stages. That's great for me. Someone who's willing to kind of listen and learn versus feeling, you know what I mean? How can I help you?
Like maybe I don't have all the answers right now. And you know, it's kind of funny. You pulled out your course manual from that first course. I'm looking at the course manuals from like the entirety as we speak, and it's exactly right. You know, one thing I'm proud of and proud of the Institute is the evolution of each course and of the material within that course really is a testament to people like you in the courses themselves who raise the hand and ask the question, why is that? Or what did you just say? Or where's the evidence for what you just said? It pushes us as an institute. It pushes you as a learner to then go back and find more. And that's how the progress, you know, evolves. And again, back then there was one or two courses. Today we have quite a lot more, you know, various affiliate programs and all these other secondary courses, but that's
I'll
really
say one other thing too, if I could, RJ.
Yeah, go for it.
Is that at that time, after taking that course, and like I mentioned, I process, I listen, I read, I apply, I grab a couple people, and I don't do everything to everybody, I don't change everything, but just grab a couple people that I'm a little stuck with. I remember even back then when I would send a question to the Institute, because they were always like, send a message. Well, there would always be a physical therapist that would get back to you. What does this mean when I find this? Or can you tell me? I just remember many times having some questions and always having a therapist within a couple of days get back in touch with me and answer those questions. That to me spoke a lot to the Institute. And that's another take-home message for me. Like, okay, this is a group of people that want everybody to be successful and want to understand the message better. So that's another piece that really kind of kept me on that path of learning and growth. So
yeah,
credit to the Institute and Ron's work.
Well, and again, not, you know, we refer to the Institute all the time as, you know, it's a brick and mortar building and it's a science with literature and courses and programs and research. But what it comes down to is the people involved with it. And again, that's people like you that I'm talking to today, that people like the directors. And back then it was probably, you know, Janie was a PTA and probably helping field a lot of those questions between you and Ron and the faculty that were early involved. But again, it's it's something that I think, thankfully, we see more of today. There's more integration now than ever. And to talk about a time like the early 2000s, when the type of discussion that we can have today about integration and asymmetry, even, you know, back then, you could go take what you learned at that course, and it could take you months to find one other person that even would have the conversation with you, and let alone in your local area. You know, mm-hmm. It could be across the country or internationally, and it just didn't exist. You know, you say the word asymmetry back in 2002, and people say, well, he's right-handed. It's, you know, kind of like what you said. So again, that progression and that evolution of our science, our institute, the people involved with it, it's really cool for me to be able to talk about it. And it's even cooler to have you shed some light on that. So I appreciate that. As you mentioned, that was kind of some of the reasoning why you were interested and what kept you involved with the science. I don't know, Michael, and I apologize for not having this date readily available, yeah. But a few years in, they created the PRC process, and yeah. I want to kind of just take a minute, not too much time, so we can get into some other stuff, but what led you to then, obviously you continued your coursework, as you mentioned earlier, you're a lifelong learner, and you ingrain yourself in applying it and moving, you know, basically taking what you learn and applying it to anyone and everyone you can get your hands on. But as you continued with our science, and again, it's an honor for me to even ask this to you, because we sit here today and there's about, I think, a little under 300 credentialed PRI providers, whether that be PRCs or PRTs. Back in 2002 and leading up to when you got credentialed in 2011, throughout those years, there was only a handful of you. And like I said, mm-hmm. you had to search for other people, like-minded individuals. At the same time, the Institute was trying to find the same individuals to go work with and collaborate with. And we had all these pockets throughout the country starting kind of, you know, their own integrative approach and their own integration of our science. Minnesota was a big pocket. We had pockets up in the Northeast by you, Vermont. Mm-hmm. And how did you progress to wanting to become certified, go through the PRC? What was that like? Not, you know, again, you didn't have a plethora of people around you to just bounce ideas off of, but who were, you know, in those early days, if you can recall, like some of the other PRI personnel or personalities that you may have collaborated with or emailed back and forth with, other than just our institute, you know, how did you eventually end up becoming credentialed and going through that process?
Yeah, good question. So a few different things. Number one, I'm disappointed to say this, I guess I'll say, but I was on an island out here for
exactly. Well, and that's kind of why. I kind of put you in a spot, because as I said, we had these pockets forming, and this is what's so cool about you and why I even am honored to talk to you about it, because again, you didn't have people around you. You didn't have a lot of PRI Nation, as we call it today, in your area. So you're off on this island, and go ahead.
Yeah, it's okay. I brought a number of courses. I don't know whether you knew this, but I brought a number of courses to the PT place that I used to work in an effort to try and bring it to Maine, to share with my colleagues, to share with my coworkers. I mean, not to get into the financial stuff, but you know, you save a lot of money when you don't have to travel and you get a reduced rate, like all that stuff. And I just... there was one physical therapist that would kind of attend all of them and kind of be inquisitive. And he's a good friend of mine, a good colleague, and a very, very integrated PRI minded therapist now, which is great. But I worked in a very large PT practice that just did not have an interest in learning. So I was just very driven because I was very passionate about understanding more about how we worked. I loved the elements of how much of the body it got into, other than just the external, which is just anything that, you know, a lot of rehab things are about, is all about the external. You know, learning more about the internal mechanisms was important to me. Going to courses was kind of like, you know, to me, it was like going to a reunion. It was just getting other people who were passionate, you know, going out to dinners and lunches and getting together for, you know, over beers at the end of the session. You know what I mean? Just like, really, it was, that was like so welcome to go to all of those. There were a couple of the instructors that I feel were very, very helpful to me to understand the science better, which I'm thankful for their work. I think it's been really phenomenal for me, and developing some relationships with some of those people has been very fulfilling to me. My drive to become certified was twofold. The main one was I just wanted to know whether the Institute felt like I knew it well enough to consider me credentialed. I think kind of, I understand what I'm doing. Do you know what I mean? Nobody will really always totally get it, but you know, there's elements of, I just want to make sure that it feels like that the Institute felt like, okay, yeah, you get this well enough that we're willing to kind of put our stamp on you. That tells me like, awesome. Then I'm not going to hurt anybody going forward, you know?
Yeah.
And two was, I even said this to my wife a number of times, like, I don't know why, but just professionally, this just feels like something I just need to do. I just need to do this for myself. I think I need to do this professionally because no one in this area is credentialed like this. I didn't do it from a numbers game. I did it just to feel like it seemed like the next step because that's the way my brain was working. At the time, I'll kind of tertiary slide here. You know, at the time, I had mastered the art of being able to start to speak in two different languages, because I wasn't really allowed to treat freely like I wanted to in the environment that I was in. So I had to learn how to tuck in elements of my cueing and my direction of an exercise or an influence of a breathing element when I'm doing some manual therapy on the clients, on the patients that I was seeing, because of the environment that I was in. And so that was very helpful for me, frankly. And it was helpful for me when I would go out into the community and then lecture at different whatever, symposiums, organizations, individual groups, so that I didn't speak in a language that was so foreign to them that they couldn't take any information, but would challenge them enough and it would bridge that gap a little bit. So,
well, there's a couple of things you mentioned that I want to just spend a brief moment on. The first is kind of the, you know, you mentioned having the credentialing process be an approval, if you will, a personal kind of mark of approval and satisfaction of saying, okay, I know this material well enough to become certified and credentialed through the Institute. I just want to quickly mention, Michael, you know, we have people asking us every day, you know, I don't know if I'm ready. I don't know if I've only taken postural once, or I've only taken this course, or I haven't taken this course yet. You know, generally my response to them is, as you kind of mentioned, you eventually just kind of take the leap, you know, you take the leap and you go through the application and the process of really coming out feeling like, okay, either you do know it, you're competent in it, you're able to go out and use it and utilize it. And at the same time, we hope that that process really strengthens that, you know, strengthens your own use of the material and confidence with the material and the science. So that's just something I wanted to touch on, is like, you may never have felt ready. You may never think that you are knowledgeable enough, or that you've taken enough courses, or that you've treated enough clients, or that you've done enough assessment. And then you just do it and you get here, and the learning process of the credentialing system itself, I think, really helps people come out the other side, you know, more confident, stronger in assessment, utilizing it, implementing it. So,
absolutely.
You know, you're not the only one that said that. And that's why it's such a commonality that we hear, is like, you know, I just don't know if I'm ready. Well, why don't you apply and we'll tell you if you're not ready, but through the process, let's get you to a point where you're comfortable with the material and can then come out the other side and implement it with your patients. So it's really a learning process. And I think sometimes people are intimidated, quite frankly, about any type of credential, any type of testing, any type of formal measurement of where you're at. But that's not really our goal. Our goal is to, you know, have it be a learning experience and strengthen all the things that you're already bringing into it. So the second thing I wanted to touch on, Michael, is this. I've talked to many people and others on the podcast, and we'll have many discussions that are similar, but being able to then utilize the science under an umbrella of a corporation or an athletic program or people around you that maybe are going to throw some arrows in your back, or maybe are going to throw a few jabs at why you're even trying to portray this to them, or why are you even doing this? You learn to integrate the science, and not even our science, anything you learn in life, you then have to learn to convey it to others, to use it with your clientele and your patients. But then also you literally have a physical restriction because of your place of employment or who you're surrounded by or where you're currently working. So I wanted to just kind of move into how you eventually manage that and how you ended up kind of getting away from that and into more of your current setting and being able to integrate and work with your clientele. Obviously now you're kind of you're your own man show. You have freedom to do and practice how you choose, but how did you kind of go towards that direction, get out of that kind of umbrella, if you will, and what really caused that switch in your life, or what gave you the confidence to kind of go out and go on a different direction?
So a few different things. Number one was certainly, from 2011 or so onward, as I continued to kind of, go through the science and continue to take courses and continue to spend time with other like-minded colleagues, continuing to work at the practice I was at. I was fortunate because I established very good relationships with the surgeons at the practice, because of all the work I had done in San Francisco, developing, post-surgical protocols and programming and all that kind of stuff that was needed to kind of research, and investigate. I was able to put a lot of good pieces into place just to make the practice more practical. So a lot of good communication with the doctors, a lot of ideas that we'd have. They'd be like, I don't know what you do over there, but whatever you do, your patients love you. You're helping them a lot. So that was very helpful in me feeling comfortable in the environment that I was in. But after a period of time, it started becoming more and more challenging for me to be able to think on, to do what I felt was best for the patient. And that has been 100% everything that I do. It's not about who's right and who's wrong. It's about someone coming to see me and saying, it seems like every single time I do the PT stuff, I hurt for the next 2 days. And I'm kind of like, I just don't think that should be the case. So let's adjust some things. Let's see how that works. And they come back like, oh my gosh, I just feel so much better. I mean, if you're doing the same things, but it just feels so much better. So I'm not patting myself on the back, but being able to integrate the components of what I've learned through the Institute and respecting asymmetry and looking at breath mechanics and what needs to kind of open up and what needs to close off and ways that you can kind of adjust someone's body position to optimize range of motion of a joint or whatever was incredibly valuable for me to be successful for anything, any post-surgical, any injury. And it became harder for me in the environment I was in particular, being the most seasoned clinician there, to have a number of coworkers not willing to want to learn. Do you know what I mean? So why is it they want to keep coming back to you and they don't want to see me? Why is it that, those types of things? That's not fair to the therapist. It's not fair to the patient. You know what I mean? It's not fair. It wasn't fair to me. It was exhausting.
Yeah. Yep.
It wasn't fair to the practice, having physicians kind of sending a bunch of people to someone who needed to work with a therapist to do that. It's just nothing seemed fair after a while. And being more and more fortunate to have been able to do a lot more lecturing and consulting and some mentoring during those later years is when I kind of said, I think it's maybe time for me to just kind of go do my own thing. There was a change of the operations management at the practice I was at. It was no longer this great little kind of cohesive group. The whole practice itself had kind of changed. It was a bigger subsidiary of a group now. And so just everything was kind of changing. So it seemed like the right time. So it's been about 5 years now that I decided to kind of go out on my own and do integrative rehab training as a business name I'd had for a while to represent my work independent of the facility I worked at. But it just seemed like it was a ton of time. And the freeing nature of it to not be underneath the umbrella of insurance reimbursement constraints or a facility or co-work constraints has been it's just been incredibly rewarding.
Yeah.
So I can integrate. I can be interdisciplinary with other professionals. I can speak freely with my clients that I work with and other colleagues, and it's just been so rewarding.
Well, and it's, I don't ever ask these questions to put people, it's not like you you know, most of the time people aren't having anything bad to say about from somewhere they came. You know, there was a reason and a timing for your involvement at, you know, that organization. But what's so cool about it, Michael, is to then see people as you kind of, I think you use the word freeing, you know, you get to a place in life where you have the leap of faith to go out on your own. And sometimes you don't even have to go out on your own. You just find other people who are like-minded and you work with them. But to see people finally make that transition into that, you know, freedom and the ability to freely integrate and use your 20 years, more than 20 years of experience with various coursework and, you know, involvement that you have with so many different groups and mindsets and modalities, to then come to a point in life where you can do all of those things at your own will, on your own schedule, with your own agenda. It's really awesome to see people have that transformation.
RJ, it's amazing to me now, to this day, I still get calls or emails from people. I've been looking for you. Or do you remember me? I saw you 7 years ago and you were onto something back then and I lost where you were. It's so heartwarming. I can't even believe it.
Yeah.
That to this day, you are able to influence someone enough, and whatever it was you said, whatever connection you had, whatever you introduced to them, meant enough that they're continuing to look. And that to me is unbelievable.
So. Yeah. Well, and you mentioned a little bit about your current setting, integrative rehab training, and you know, I, for one, can say how fun, I just kind of mentioned how fun it is to see not only you, but others kind of get into these settings where really you excel and thrive and where you're meant to be. But for our listeners, again, Michael, you have so many resources and you lecture and mentor and teach not only each patient and client that you see, but on so many various professional and national and international levels. But I do want to get into a little bit about your current setting. I know, you know, you still integrate with a lot of athletes, sports teams, from the high school level all the way to professional realms. But what's your typical, you know, and again, I kind of want to even tie this in a little bit, Michael, to our current times. You're doing a lot, we're all doing a lot of virtual treatment sessions with people in their homes or virtually in their homes. But currently, throughout the last couple of years, have you seen a typical clientele, or do you see kind of the full spectrum of athletes, non-athletes, rehab, non-rehab? Walk us through a little bit about your, you know, who your typical clientele is, and then maybe we'll break down a little bit about, you know, how you typically evaluate and assess and use what you've learned over the years.
Sure. So it's across the gamut, which is what is just so great. You know, I don't want to sound like that restaurant that's got, you know, 100 different things you can choose from because you're a specialist in nothing. But as you know, as well as I do, the human body, you can have a lot of adaptation from someone who's 7 years old to someone who's 70 years old. And there's a lot of similarities, if you would, about the way to kind of look at the human structure. It's just different adaptations and layers of things that they've stacked on top. So I'll literally have a client who's, you know, a really high level competitive soccer player. The very next client will be, you know, a 75-year-old person who just has difficulty breathing and they're trying to work on their low back pain.
Yeah.
So it's really a very diverse clientele, which is just fabulous. I see people who have, you know, kind of post-acute injuries that are kind of coming off. Oh my gosh. I've seen them in the past for things. I tweaked my knee and my shoulder, my whatever. I've got an arthritic knee. It flared up. Can you take a look at me? To people who have a lot of, much like a lot of other PRI clinicians that I know, very complicated people who have run the gamut of the medical system and have been to, you know, been to everybody, you know, and looked at everything and no diagnosis or no real comprehensive plan. And so to have a tool like the Institute's put together, I will use this because I told him I was going to use it. A client I talked to just the other day, said, I feel like PRI is kind of like, it's like the one ring that binds them. It's kind of like the Lord of the Rings. Like I've been delving around all these other things. I think this is going to be the one thing. So I thought that was a great analogy, but to that element, there's so much that it brings together from the standpoint of being able to look at things from all sensory aspects, yeah. Looking at things from all working from the inside out. I worked with an incredibly high level golfer recently who said, you have no idea how many people I've worked with, and you're the first person that talks about my insides more than my outsides. And that type of thing to me is rewarding, not because, hey, it's cool, I'm talking different than everybody else, but because, we get a picture in our head about what we think the inner workings are doing. Yeah. And it helps us to then make decisions about how we want to then kind of manipulate the body to put it into positions to manage these positions, these muscle chains, these compensations that the body's put into place. That's the fun part, the detective part of it.
Yeah. Well, and the cool part about it is, and you can kind of highlight or discuss more on this, but you mentioned a seven-year-old and a 70-year-old, their underlying compensation and their overuse or misuse over time may end up needing the same progression of movement or positional activity. Yes, it's probably going to include a little bit of breathing mechanics and retraining the respiratory, systems and diaphragms. But I think it's so cool to be able to sit back and say, again, not to be patting ourselves on the back or you or any of our providers for that matter, but to sit back and say, your client might be right. PRI, you could look at PRI as the Lord of the as the ring, but within that ring is so many different disciplines and so many different movement strategies and assessment tools and patterned, whatever it may be, pattern dysfunction or pattern morphology that has happened over time. So as you said, it could be a seven-year-old who's just starting out to form these patterns. Maybe they have a little scoliotic curve, which by the way is normal. Or maybe they're 70-year-olds and they just need to get that curve a little bit, they need to get out of their curve, or they need to retrain their diaphragm to get a little bit more breathing control, like you said. So I think it's so cool to be able to say, PRI doesn't stand for one way of looking at things. And maybe the ring is a good analogy because it brings together all those disciplines of, integration, and it's right in your name, integrative rehab. But to be able to utilize and to look at the body from, as you said, the inside out, and the compensations and the positions that are not only our internal organs are in, but then what they lead to happen on the outside oftentimes doesn't even get addressed by, physical medicine or typical approaches. So
no, it doesn't. And it's been very validating, as we've talked about, before we got started, it's been very validating to see some of the things that are kind of coming around now. Like I was always the odd guy talking about breathing, and to have so many people now literally getting emails just kind of saying, I didn't get what you were talking about before. Now I understand where you're coming from. And so that's been very rewarding to, I don't care who the message comes from. I don't care how it gets there, but just to have other people realize that there's so much more that you can offer, that so much more long lasting and in so many cases, life changing versus just fixing one issue. You're literally changing some people's entire well-being in many cases.
Yeah. Well, and their entire system, as you mentioned,
100%,
instead of one issue or one presentation, you may be addressing one pattern or one presentation of that pattern, but in turn, you're also going to be affecting the entire system at play. As you know more than anyone, the autonomic drive behind, you can't often even go into the realm of autonomics or all these other, integrative things with your patients and clients, because they would probably not come back. They would say, well, I had no idea what he's talking about. So you address these positional activities, their breathing, their, overuse of the right side and misuse of other musculature to address those further systematic issues that in turn, it's just such a integrative process that fixing a left toe or right, picking one issue and the ramifications that it has for the patient that often they leave not even understanding.
Totally. And I said this literally to a client this morning. He's here to see me with a shoulder issue and stuff like that. And I think it was the second time seeing me. And I said, if this helps explain it any better about why I do what I'm doing, if you were here to see me with ankle pain, you'd probably be getting the exact same activities.
Yeah.
So I'm addressing, and I've never lost sight of your injury and your ailment and your problem, but I got to get your workings into a good place for us to be successful managing whatever that problem is. Otherwise, anything we do from a direct intervention, in my mind, just isn't going to be as successful.
Yeah. Well, and it goes back to kind of the initial comment about addressing these topics, you know, patterns of compensation, breathing mechanics, patella, you know, hamstring, bilateral issues. What can we do to cue and to come down to that patient client level, get them to understand it at their own level of need and desire so that they get just enough to walk out the door and say, okay, I think I understand what he's telling me, but yet he's treating my shoulder pain at the ankle joint. So it's a spine level of, you know.
It is. Yep. No, it is. And I'm sure anybody who other PRI practitioners listening to this will appreciate is that art of not overloading. I call it the glazed over approach. Okay. I'm losing them. I got to bring it down and I got to write it out. You know,
yeah.
I try really, really hard not to overwhelm. There'll be times when people ask a question. I'll be like, I really could talk to you about this for the entire day. And I'd love to. And if you want to have the conversation, let's talk. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm going to give you a simple answer, but realize that it's not a simple explanation for something. Yeah. I want you to appreciate that. I love this dialogue and I'd love to have you learn. It's all a matter of how much do you want to learn?
Yeah.
For some people, it's like, just tell me what I need to do. I'll do it. I'm exactly. super compliant. And that's exactly. great. And then there's others that just really, they're the ones that I've been working with one-on-one for 5 years. You know what I mean? They come back every week. It's a new piece. It's a new whatever. Yeah. So,
well, and that's kind of my last really question about how you approach, you know, integration and rehab with your clients and patients. But Michael, do you, you know, you mentioned the spectrum of clients you see. For us and for this conversation, we address them the same, you know, whether it's the 7-year-old or the 70-year-old, you know what to look for. You know what patterns they're probably in, what compensation that may be occurring because of assessment that you've done. Do you have a go-to? And I know, you know, we discussed earlier how big the topic of breathing is right now because of the times we're in and because of, you know, the movement and the snowballing effect that it's created. But do you have a specific point in the spectrum that you find is most relatable to your patients and clients? And maybe it is breathing mechanics and position and structure of their rib cage or their thorax. But do you find that you're cueing or discussing similar things, no matter what the client is or who they are walking through your door? Is there a kind of a start point that you like to start with them?
Great question. I will say that a conversation I typically have. So please understand what I need to start with you is we need to get your breathing mechanics better. And now listen just for a second. I want you to realize that I'm not talking about breathing like you think about it from a standpoint of just like, you know, gas exchange or the meditative aspect of stuff, which are both super important. I want you to think about what we're going to be using is using breath as a tool. We're using it as an internal mechanism to pump things and create expansion into different places that don't normally expand well and create compression in places that don't normally compress so well. I want to literally create shape change to your body, because what these measures that I've demonstrated to you are showing me are that things are not ideally positioned. Nothing's out of place. It's just not able to do what they're supposed to do. And so these measures tell me how safe you are with me being able to then do whatever we want to do, load you, put you on the athletic field, whatever. So or if I say
standing out of a chair, you know, handling gravity.
Up.
Yeah.
Balance. Exactly. So if I say breathe to you or hold for 5 breaths or whatever, please understand it's a tool. And I want you to think about it as something you're using to manipulate things. when you can get that in your head, when we do stuff, I think you're going to find all the different things we do successful. If you're doing single leg balance and we want to work on balance, respect the wobble, but do me a favor, don't hold your breath, because I'm going to have you breathe for that too, because you have to. And if it's squat, don't hold your, you know what I mean? So it's all of those elements I kind of keep coming back to. And the client I saw yesterday said, because he's writing a book, he's a very, very well respected, successful financial guy. And he said, I'm finishing my book. I know the name of your book. It's all about the air. So using that as a tool, I find is the thing that I go to, you know, almost always. And if I've ever, one of your questions was kind of funny. I'm like, if there's anything that I wasn't successful with someone that I had to go back and recheck, it's, I didn't recheck whether they were doing what I asked them to do correctly.
Yeah.
Whether I got a zone of apposition or optimal expansion where it was supposed to be or whatever. I missed it. You know what I mean? They manipulated it differently, something like that. So that is kind of where it comes back to.
Well, and it was kind of a leading question, because I know you well enough to know that you incorporate breath work with everyone and all your clients and patients. But I think it was an important question to get across, because even with our own scope of our science, we have people out there utilizing our techniques, non-manual techniques or modified techniques or their own techniques. You know, people every day create different positions of movement and different, you know, advantageous strategies to get people out of positions and into other positions. But are they appreciating the breath, and are they holding their breath? Are they exhaling? Are they staying in an inhalated state? As you mentioned, it's so easy to progress through treatment. And I'm not a clinician, but I've been around it long enough to know that if there's one thing that's probably missing from even the most simplest techniques or the simplest progression of treatment, it's what we're talking about now. And the appreciation for every pause or every extended exhale or inhale. And again, it was kind of a leading question, because I kind of knew where you would take it.
Well done.
it's such a summary of the circle that we found, that you and your career have seen going back again from the early 2000s, 20 years later, people finally appreciating breathing and the mechanics associated with it. There's all these, you know, I myself enjoy, you know, researching all these other methods, Wim Hof breathing and all these other strategies, but people are talking about it and they have been. It's just that the movement and the traction behind it hasn't always been there. So it's very cool to finally be able to have this conversation, and maybe we'll have a few people that understand and listen to it. So, Michael, as we wrap up, I just want to kind of, you know, mention and get into a little bit of your professional integration and your outreach with various other professionals. And again, you're always, you know, integrating and consulting with athletes and sports, you know, professionals, whether that be, you know, I consider an athlete the same thing as a dancer or as a, 100%. we're all athletes, but what excites you about being able to, now that we are 20 years, you know, past all these initial foundational concepts, and now that we can finally start having conversations with more and more like-minded people out there, what excites you the most about being able to go to those other places? Maybe it's a team setting, maybe it's a, you know, maybe it's a Broadway group that has some dancers that wants to consult with you. I know you do a lot of, we can kind of get in after this question, we can mention some of your speaking opportunities, but what excites you the most about being able to finally connect and have these conversations with other people and finally getting at a point where you can freely do so and have some of that mentor, you know, being able to mentor people and help guide people throughout this process, parts of it that you enjoy or you know, the greatest kind of reward that brings.
So a few things, you know, at the high level with the people that I work that are, whatever you want to call them, you know what I mean? Just very accomplished athletes. They understand, respect, and appreciate the subtleties. Most of them feel stuff. You make a little tweak, a little adjustment, and I do it for the betterment of them as an athlete, of course, it's great if their scores improve or, you know what I mean, or whatever it is, but I do it to improve them, their longevity as an athlete, whatever you
a high
call
level.
Yeah. Yeah. And they can make those little tweaks and little adjustments in their lifting strategy or their body position or dancers. Just, I mean, the nuances of what they can kind of accomplish is fabulous. So that to me, I find rewarding because they feel it and they can apply it almost immediately and they can sense the differences. Oh my gosh. Yeah. I totally feel that now. You know what I mean? I've been looking for that muscle. I've been looking, whatever.
Yeah.
When it comes to the, whatever you want to call it, the general population of people. To me, it's novelty. It's having them sense and feel change.
Maybe for the first time.
For the first time. It's having them understand and absorb a change in their structure somehow. I don't want to, it's like Ron says, I don't want to sell them a dog and pony show about like, okay, look at this arm move now, or this leg move now. That's not what it's about. That's just letting me know if I was successful with an intervention. If they appreciate it, awesome. But it's, what do you feel like now? Or can you find this muscle now when we get into this position, whatever, split squat to do this exercise? My gosh, I totally feel those muscles now. That novelty change like is a big deal for me and most of the time for them. And so from a standpoint of how I feel the progression of that matters, I love to see people. I see some people quarterly because like I get my updates. You know, because now I've taken what you've done and I've applied it to this and I've applied it to that. And we've maybe shared a couple texts or phone calls along the way. And then I can kind of build them to that next level. And take it and develop it that much more based upon a principle of something they got. I kind of come in last week. Says, all right, what's my lesson this week? You know, he's so funny about, and that to me is the rewarding part of it, regardless of whether you're working with the highest level athlete or the general population. The mentoring piece I love because, I work with some really smart, great people and I'm formalizing my mentorship program now to literally put it out there for people who have an interest in going through this process. So more to come very soon because I love being able to share what I've learned over the years, the language and the integration of approaches and models and intervention strategies that all complement each other, share the mistakes I've made, give not shortcuts so that they don't learn, but shortcuts so that they don't make the same mistakes I did along the way.
Yeah.
That will allow someone to be more and more successful, but also expose them to things in a less threatening format.
Yeah.
That's not so overwhelming.
Well, and I want to quickly interject here. Again, we mentioned your son, Mitch, and I hope he doesn't mind us mentioning him, but you know, how cool is it to have your own son to be able to mentor him and start there and say, you know, my experience doesn't have to be yours. You know, you're not trying to get him to necessarily follow in your footsteps, but let me at least tell you what I've learned and what I've experienced and how this, you know, how this mistake in my career led me to figure out this outcome or whatever. You know, you talk about mentorship and it's so cool to see Mitch being able to kind of learn from you and progress next to you. So that has to be quite rewarding as well.
Yeah. It's humbled beyond belief. It was surprised a little bit when he said he was going to college and saying he wanted to study athletic training. But you know, after he graduated, he's kind of like, you know, I really like what you do. I like the model that you do and the diversity of your clientele. And so he's actually been starting to see clients at the studio. I see people and starting to do the fitness rehab model that we do and seeing people at their homes. And it's been great. And sharing people and discussing things like at that level.
Yeah.
Wow, holy cow, I can talk the talk and you can talk the talk too.
Yeah. And we can actually like talk to each other as you know, colleagues more than exactly. So no, as a new dad myself, I can't imagine the reward that is, again, not because you know, it's nothing that you pushed or necessarily even guided him to. He's there because he wants to be. So how cool that you guys are able to work together. It's awesome. Yeah. I won't keep you much longer, Michael. Just a quick last kind of, topic and question, if you will. I know you do a lot of speaking engagements, you do a lot of in-services, and that all kind of plays into your consultation with other organizations and sports and dancers and athletics and whatever we want to, group you want to talk about. But over the years, I know you've become, quite active with the Perform Better summits. You've done a lot of work down in, I believe, Brazil, if I'm correct. I don't know if it's always down in Brazil, but, piggyback off that mentorship topic and just kind of some of the ways that you, I don't quite know the right word, but the opportunity or the engagement that you have with these other organizations for you to come in and teach them and maybe, integrate and, they approach you to come down and address some of these issues and explain kind of the work that you do. But what excites you about working with, these international groups? I know Perform Better is not just international, but you have done international summits with them. Do you have any exciting, what are you most excited for in the future? Do you have plans to, do any future summits or anything coming up in 2021 that anyone mm-hmm. could, possibly learn from or be exposed to?
I've been very fortunate over the years to have just had opportunities and developed relationships with people that have helped me have these types of opportunities. Yep. So Perform Better, I got to be honest with you, I don't remember how that came about. I think it came about from Mike Boyle, in all honesty. I had done an in-service at his establishment, and he said, hey, this guy's talking about some stuff that's kind of pretty cool. So he called Chris Poirier, who's just love him. And so I did a lecture at one of the summits. I can't remember what year it started, but I think it's probably my eighth or ninth year doing it. And so the summits are just a big three-day extravaganza of just brilliant people, and it's an honor to be doing it every year. So that kind of started that. And then, having been fortunate and done a couple programs in Japan and doing a couple programs in China. And then the Perform Better Summit started last year down in Brazil as well. So they have it, in four places in the U.S. And I was asked to go down to Brazil. That was kind of like a guy that came up and introduced himself to me at a course a couple of years. It's just like everything has just been very...
One thing leads to another.
Yeah, and I just feel very fortunate with the opportunities that it's created for me. And so I enjoy lecturing a lot because it makes me research a lot and it makes me refine my art and my message. I love to educate others. I'm adjunct faculty at the University of New England. I taught down there for a number of years and started out in teaching and kind of got away from that. But I enjoy that part of things.
Yeah.
And so to have opportunities to lecture at, small groups, large conferences and seminars, do one-on-one mentoring, work with, I work with some teams, staff, 3, 4, 5 staff member. Yep. I mean, just the diversity of that to me really feeds me, but also makes me better because I have to be better at what I do in order to make sure that.
Explain it to others.
Yeah. And so, so that makes me incredibly passionate. And to one of your other questions, in today's COVID world, because I had a pretty very busy lecture schedule this year has dramatically changed. It's been nice to kind of revamp that and spend a little more time thinking about the number of people that I'm doing one-on-one stuff with or small groups that I'm doing one-on-one stuff with and breaking up a 12-hour back-to-back client day with that. You know what I mean?
So
or these things, podcasts like this, spending time with you and just discussing things. I've done some work with the online sleep coach, Nick Lamb. I've done a couple of kind of collaborative breath work, sleep stuff. That's some really great things.
Yeah.
Sleep's an issue, I'm telling you. And people want to learn about some of that. There's some of that, some of those lectures, collaborative lectures that I've done with him available on his website and they'll be up on mine soon.
It's one of those things that, you have this idea of what your year will look like and all of us have had to rearrange and kind of refocus, if you will, but there's still good coming out of it. And, I'm sure you've found that, a lot of this one-on-one mentorship and one-on-one conversation that we've all had with other people, on a typical year and with a typical schedule, we wouldn't necessarily have time to do some of this stuff. So I know you stay busy and you will, whether that be with virtual summits or, different groups of, I saw the I can't remember the, there was more than just sleep with that sleep coach with Nick Lamb that you did. They had like a whole broad range of stuff.
So, 2 day recovery summit. And there's a lot of smart people on that. So really worth working. Worth checking out.
I think that's really the benefit, if there is any, of our current times, is the amount of time and thought and dedication that people are putting into resources and learning and having the availability to still connect as a movement-minded profession, and including all of the things that fall under that, sleep and, you know, nutrition and movement and physical medicine and all these things under that big umbrella are still occurring. So we're lucky to be able to still connect and have those opportunities. Again, it's been a pleasure having you, Michael. I want to mention for our listeners, again, your website, Integrative Rehab Training. You can find a lot of resources on there that Michael's put together over the years. We'll have this episode on our website on your provider page, along with many of the articles you've authored in the past. You've done several other podcast episodes with various individuals regarding, you know, as you just mentioned, sleep and even intros on PRI, some webinars and different resources available. I encourage anyone listening to both check out your website and also go to your provider page on our website. We have a lot of resources that you've put together listed, and I'm sure we'll have, you know, more to come from you. And as you continue to progress and expand on your own, you know, in your own mentorship realm and different various discussions you have with so many other professionals. It's really a pleasure again to have you. We continually try to keep up with individuals like you and keep a grasp onto really the vastness of conversation that is happening. We started off this conversation back in the 2000s saying, you know, you found our science on the website by clicking on a few articles. Today, I get online every day and it's just such a plethora of content that's coming out and being put together, and you're right in the middle of that and in the mix. So again, thanks so much for joining us, Michael. And we, you know, speaking from the Institute, we really look forward to continuing to be involved with anything you do and watch you grow and interact and integrate with you. So if anyone, is there anything I missed as far as people getting a hold of you? I think your website pretty much has, you know, like I said, a ton of resources. You, you're currently treating out of Back Cove. What's the space there called again? Back Cove.
Back Cove Personal Fitness.
Yes.
Portland, Maine.
Yep. And again, Integrative Rehab Training. You can get a hold of Michael there. And again, you're doing a lot of online consultation, home visits, and things like that, as many of us are. So thank you. And we look forward to having you back probably in the future and someday having Mitch, you know, further progress with us and as he works through his courses. So,
RJ, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for your time. And I really appreciate the opportunity to be on this.
Thank you, Michael.
If you're interested in learning more about the Postural Restoration Institute, you can visit our website at posturalrestoration.com. You can also email me directly at info@posturalrestoration.com or follow us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter to see how PRI Nation is currently applying this science. As always, thank you for listening, and I look forward to having you on our next episode.